This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy. You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 344, brought to you by Seagate GoFlex Satellite, graphically and iFanboy listeners like you. iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 344. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
We're back.
I don't know why that made me laugh, but
we're back.
I don't think you planned to say blah.
Blah.
And Ron Richards. There it is.
We're barely back.
I'm hurting.
Yeah.
I'm so tired.
Yep. There you go. There you had it.
There it is.
We'll see you next week.
Are we done?
Yep.
iFanboy.com is our website. It's about comic books because we like them ostensibly, and we read them ostensibly. And that's none of that's true. We do like comics, and we actually read them usually. And one of us picks the one that they call the pick of the week. That's the best one that they read that week. They read about it on the website. We come here, we talk about it on the show, other books from the week, other stuff.
You okay there?
Yeah, you left in the script bomb that I left for you.
Oops. I have giant balls. Before we get to the show, quicker, I got myself.
Truly boomerang. There you
go. Wow, totally. That was a bad idea. Before we get to the show, we're going to be talking about the stuff that happens in the books. Because none of them are Walking Dead, so it's totally cool. This is a review show, so go into there knowing that, and you'll be cool. If you don't want to hear what happens in them, then read them first. That's all I got for you. Come on, it's common
sense. Generally how it works.
Yeah. Connor. I mean,
it's not a hard concept.
You make with a pick?
I do, and I have still con plague, so I apologize in advance if I break out in a coughing fit. Just move on to the next book if that happens. The pick this week was Batman Beyond Unlimited number 6 from DC Comics, and there's a couple of interesting things about this book. Number one is that most DC books, and I guess Marvel too now, are $2.99 for 20 pages of story. This is a dollar more for twice as much story. So in terms of getting value for your money, story-wise, you can't. It's really hard to beat Batman Beyond Unlimited.
So now this is one of the digital first releases, right?
Yes, it comes out digitally. I think it's weekly.
Yeah, it's weekly for 99 cents for, I think, like 8 or 10 pages.
Which is half of a comics page. They cut. Yeah. It's constructed that way. And so it comes out weekly, and then at the end of the month, they collect into this paper version that goes to the stores. And it's three different stories, one featuring Superman, one featuring Batman, one featuring the Justice League. And they're all taking place in the Batman Beyond future in the Bruce Timm DC animated universe. So it's not a New 52 book. It doesn't take place in the comic book continuity. It's taking place in the cartoon continuity. So if you watch those shows at all, this is sort of a continuation of those characters.
And that's an important distinction.
It is.
Yeah.
So I loved the cartoons except for Batman Beyond, which I never watched. So I remember picking up the miniseries they put out last year because Adam Beechin was writing it, and I'm a big fan of Adam Beechin's Batman work and really enjoying it. So I bought this. I've been buying this series and really, really enjoying it. There's a really interesting bunch of creators on this book. Howard Porter from Justice League of America, Morrison's book. He draws the Superman story. Bray Fogle draws the Batman Beyond story. Dustin Nguyen writes and draws the Justice League story. So there's some. They have high quality people on these books, which you necessarily would think from, oftentimes digital first books get sort of shunted off, and they want to have the people who are good doing the print books. But they actually have a high quality team on this book. Although I can't imagine how expensive it is. There's like nine people, primary creators on this book. But there's three different stories. So you're following three different storylines. They're not connected, the stories. The Superman story features Lex Luthor's daughter enacting a plan to kill Superman, taking up the mantle of her father, who was a hologram. Then the Justice League story features the Justice League of the future on Apocalypse trying to save them from a giant snake creature that was conjured up on Earth. And Orion is the new Darkseid, and Darkseid is blind and he sort of has no power, but he's still an asshole. And Superman and him still hate each other because of what happened in the cartoon. But primarily, Batman, who is Terry McGinnis, is there, and he gets flirted with by Orion's wife because she's kind of a hussy, but also because she apparently had a thing with Bruce. She thinks he's Bruce, and that leads to all kinds of awkward humor. And then the Batman story features 10,000 Jokers, which is the primary gang in that universe. They're people who worship the Joker, and 10,000 of them have invaded Gotham City, so he's dealing with that. It's just lots of fun, solid comic book work. It's great to see Bray Fogle. He's just as good as he ever was, if not better. He's one of those classic guys from the 90s. I'm glad to see him back. Howard Porter's style has changed just a little bit since he did JLA. It's not quite as rough. But
well, that's probably related to his injury, right? He hurt his hand.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. He did hurt his hand, but it's still Howard Porter. It's not bad. It's just his characters are a bit more bulky than they used to be. Remember, they were sort of lanky.
Yeah,
yep. JLA books, and he had kind of a rough style. This is just any artist's style evolves over time, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Freshman year of college, my God.
That was 15 years ago, Jesus.
Yeah.
So this is basically just like a great anthology almost, right?
It is. It's kind of an anthology. And if you were there's a lot of people who watch those shows. If you were a fan of those shows and you like those characters, this is a great place to jump in. And the stories do continue. The weird thing is the Batman story is chapter one. So you can see if we could start there, but the other stories are not chapter one. So it's kind of hard. They should have really coordinated that a little better. But really, if you know these characters at all, then you can jump on here and sort of suss out what's going on and enjoy it for what it is, which is a great 30 pages of story for $3.99 and featuring characters from a much beloved cartoon series.
I mean, I like that approach of just like, hey, we've got this great little kind of mini universe. We've got these characters. Let's just tell fun stories and put them in a shorter format. And I mean, $3.99 stings a little, but for 30 pages, that's a lot of story there.
Super comic book worth of story for $1 more.
Yeah.
And the thing is, they're smart about the digital releases in that they do these and they do Smallville, which are books that would conceivably appeal to a larger audience who would more conceivably be able to be going to digital to find their books. So they're smart in that sense. And then they collect both and print them out for else who wants to read them in the paper form. But really fun. And it's just great character work, fun. Everybody working on these books are pros. They've been around forever. They're not, so they know what they're doing. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
So,
man, how great would it be to get Darwin to go back and do a story?
It would be great. He worked in Batman Beyond, and
he did the opening credit sequence back in the late 90s, which is unheard of.
Yeah.
For how it looks,
Yeah. So it'd be awesome, but it won't happen. But anyway, if you join at all, it's old, sort of grumpy old Superman with the gray hair temples, and it's young Batman being mentored by a grumpy, even grumpier old Bruce Wayne.
Is it grumpy old heroes?
Kind of is, because at the end of the Superman story,
I would read that.
Bruce Wayne shows up in a kind of Dark Knight Returns-esque set of armor.
With a walker.
Help Superman. It's kind of grumpy old heroes. They always bicker with each other. And they,
what? Not so superhero now, is it? What?
Steel Loren shows up, which was weird. And Burgess Meredith. Or that could have just been the Penguin. Either way, so that was my pick of the week.
Glasses, so it's weird.
Batman Beyond Unlimited. He can't read anything, which is the tragedy of it.
But he loves it.
He loves books but can't read them. Which
so those and those two things are connected in some way.
Commodore Schmidlap.
I need to watch it. I might have got that on DVD. So then the other big book this week, which everyone was predicting would be the pick, was Saga number 5. Yeah. And
here's the thing about Saga is that, like, I loved it, loved everything. This was the first issue where I'm like, all right, this is just an issue.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
It's already entered that zone now where it's going to be amazing, which sucks, but that's where we're at. We had 3 of the first 4 issues be pick of the week, and again, this was a great issue. I really enjoyed it, but again, now it's going to knock my socks off, which is kind of putting it in a bad spot.
Right. Although I wonder if Fiona Staples is as let's get some analysis going. I wonder if the first page splash is going to be Fiona Staples' thing, because now this is. I got to go back and look at issues 1, 2, and 3. But last issue we had the creepy horrors on legs. This issue we got the TV guy in the can. Right.
Well, that's probably in the script.
Yeah. 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 No. So yeah, but I wonder if that's a plan thing or if this is just a coincidence. I wonder
that's a Vaughn thing. He's done that all along because like usually the last page of a given issue is and then the first page is like, oh,
yeah.
Dude's got a formula.
I'm not questioning that, but I think in this particular one, it's always been like not a shocking image, but like an image that sets the tone almost for the issue.
Well, let's talk about these robot people.
I love them.
I don't understand.
I know, and that's what I like about it.
Yes, it's awesome.
Yep. He's going to be like, no, he's Prince Robot. There's no equivocation about that.
He's Prince Robot the Fourth, isn't he? Or something.
But
like
he poops.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he gets Lady Robots pregnant.
Right.
Well, we've already seen them having sex. So.
Well, yeah, but not very good.
Really, there's bodily functions involved.
I mean, but that's what's interesting, because wasn't he having performance problems because of his time on the battlefield? So
he needs to reboot his OS.
How does he eat? No, how does he eat? And then
poop.
Create waste.
Yeah. Good question.
Or is he actually?
Are they going to answer all? He doesn't have his pants.
I don't know.
He might just be using it as a chair. It's some privacy.
That's what I thought for a moment. I'm like, but then you see his pants are bundled up on his knees. So he's
he's confused because people call it the throne, and he is a prince. he's not intelligent.
Yeah. There was some snarky dialogue in there that I thought was great. Which is what was it in that conversation that cracks me up? This is the happiest I've ever been in a bloody latrine on bloody cleave. Like. I just thought that was
I get the sense, and I don't know if he planned it or not, but like that's a character that I think he likes to write.
Yeah.
It just seems like that's a character that a writer would have a lot of fun with. And I think as we keep going, I'm guessing we're going to see more of that.
Yeah.
as he's trying to figure out how they actually procreate too.
I hope so. My one question was, although maybe I just answered it, but so we go back to the couple, and there's a pretty cool fight with this with a sword that's not it's probably an enchanted sword. Now that I realize it, I was like, is it kind of like lightsabery, but it's actually a sword? And then I remembered my World of Warcraft time, and so
you probably had to grind like a bitch to get the
chance. Exactly. So is there? So the little spirit thing only comes out at night, right?
Yes, it's tied to the moon. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I wonder what now that they're on a ship, what happens when they leave that planet? Right.
Ooh, yeah. Good question.
Yeah.
Perpetually night in space, I guess.
Yeah. Who knows? But yeah, it was a good. It was great. I mean, the level of quality in this book is so high, but it wasn't like I might have made this my pick, but I'm not sure this. I would have made this pick of the week, only because it was just like, yep, story's continuing. You know. Five issues in.
You know what I noticed about this book as I was looking, just as a sort of construction standpoint, he's taken the same approach as he did with Ex Machina. Like the there's not many panels on a given page. It's very spaced out.
Yeah.
It isn't, which is interesting though, because I don't get to the end of it feeling like, oh, that was it.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a 3-minute read, but it's pretty airy.
Yeah.
Like he's using the pages in that way to make it feel conversational, which can,
yep,
can make it feel a little short.
Yep. So, yeah, it's just great. It's just, I mean, like, it's like I couldn't wait to read it when I got it. It was the first thing I read, and the letters column is continuing to be as entertaining as it can be, even, you know, even now that it's got other people's writing in and Brian's kind of responses. But but yeah, it's just so, I like what's happening here. So cool. Saga's so good. I just wish it could come out every week. All right. That said, though, I know every couple of months I bring up X Factor and talk about how Peter David quietly is doing interesting things. But X Factor 240, which Peter David and Neil Edwards on art. Art wasn't so anything to write home about, but what was interesting was this issue focused all around Layla Miller, who has been ever since you know she was introduced at the very very beginning of Peter David's run on X Factor. She's been a bit of enigma and a bit of interesting. And Peter David did a really fun approach to the character piece, where basically she is running to stop a woman from killing herself in the city. And as she's running through the city, she reaches these different junctures, and we basically see, because Layla Miller knows, she knows stuff, she knows what can happen. And we see the two different paths, the divergent paths that could happen, where she runs by a mugging, and she can either stop the muggers and help the woman, and you see what happens there, or she runs by and doesn't help, and you see what happens there, and in that case, the same thing happens, like the same.
It's like result. Choose your own adventure.
Yeah, almost like that, exactly. And there's and they did a great approach with it, where the panels go vertically. So sometimes there are two columns, sometimes there are three columns of the different paths, and then they colored the paths with like a blue hue or a green hue or a red hue to see what was happening in the different approaches. And I kind of almost, it was so good that I was kind of bummed that it wasn't the entire issue, because it was like there'd be stuff would happen and then there'd be a path change or a path, you know, kind of a fork in the road, and then more stuff would happen and then there'd be another fork in the road, and then more stuff would happen, there'd be another fork in the road. And I was like, I was reading this, I'm like, this is some great conceptual writing, and if Peter David did an entire series with just Layla in this manner, I think it would be a blast to read. But this
might drive him crazy, though.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, but this issue was very, and the issue was called Run Layla Run, so like kind of brought up memories of Run Lola Run, which is if anybody remember that old German independent movie that basically was that same concept, where a girl was running to try to save her boyfriend, and you saw basically the three different things that could happen.
Are movies from the early 2000s considered old now?
Well, this is late 90s. Hey, it's no. 15, 12 years. No. Yeah, that came out in 99.
You shitting me, really?
No, yeah. Pretty sure.
Even so, you say old German movie. I'm thinking of Metropolis.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, but 10 years, I think a decade is enough to say old.
Did they renumber X Factor?
They brought it back to its original numbering.
Okay, because I was just looking at
like, I dropped off a while ago.
I know. I was thinking. I remember getting number one, talking about it on the show. We haven't been doing the show for.
Yeah, no, they jumped up to the original series. Okay. Number, I believe as they're off
that
to
would
do.
Be 20 years.
Yeah, we haven't been to God. Can you imagine?
That's what it'll feel like one day.
Yeah,
it's a minor miracle almost that he's getting left alone to work on this book, and I don't mean left alone the fact that he has to deal with crossovers. He does, but. He's still doing the book. He's still in his own little kind of world in that X Factor world. Which
it must hit that perfect sales spot where
it's profitable.
It's enough to make the money, but not so much that they need to mess with it, and like, you know, it's not like they get high end artists on it, so they're probably not spending that much there. It's like a perfect storm, sort of. It's never going to go above where it is, but he just gets to keep doing his thing.
Yeah, and I think probably there's got to be a certain not quantitative factor to it as well, where, you know, after so many years of being the example of the writer who gets derailed by crossovers, that maybe he's like, you know, just let me do my thing. Because this is not AVX. This is nothing. This is all on its own. And it's going to end in a couple of months. We all know, with Marvel now, who knows what the future of this book will be. But this issue on its own was a real treat. It was a lot of fun. Actually, I think this is my pick of the week. So there you all go.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Do you say that about every book you talk about this week?
No.
Especially if you didn't like it.
He's not going to say it about Avengers vs. X-Men number 8.
Wow, am I not going to say it about Avengers vs. X-Men number 8? Like, did they just do this last week?
This was two bad ones in a row.
This is the worst issue of the whole thing. I mean, first off, so it was Adam Kubert on art.
And is it Adam or Andy?
It was Adam. It says on the
the life of me, I cannot get that right ever.
I like Andy better.
Yeah.
No, I like Adam better.
See, I don't know.
Fuck. Adam is the one who's the Marvel working. Andy's the DC guy.
Okay. Well, Connor, you have the book in front of you.
Yes.
Turn to the page, the middle of the book where the staples are, and it's a fight between Namor and Red Hulk.
Yeah.
On the right side of the page, the upper right-hand corner, what is up with that?
It seemed like he drew this book in like a week.
Yeah.
This is not the level of quality we expect from Adam Kubert. It was really good.
And it wasn't even like, oh, well, there's 90 different inkers. There's one inker.
Yeah.
You know, like it was just solid. I mean, you know, it was a solid team that should be able to do this. And I was reading it. I was like, this is some rough art.
This is a Kubert that did the Wolverine and X-Men, Wolverine and Spider-Man mini. Was the other Kubert.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah.
Art was fantastic. This literally seemed like he had, we have to get this book out. You need to do this, by Friday. And he did it.
So story-wise, the contriveness continues where, you know, now it's Highlander in that. So Namor freaks out and attacks Wakanda, which I still don't understand why. And I'm reading everything. And basically, the Avengers...
And I'm reading everything, and I don't know what's happening.
The Avengers basically throw everything they've got at him, including the Scarlet Witch, and they beat him. And so the Phoenix Force leaves Namor, and then Cyclops, Emma, Colossus, and Magic get more powerful. So each one gets defeated, they get a little more powerful.
Who wrote this one?
Bendis. Yep. And then it basically ends with Xavier getting into the mix, threatening Scott. And also the Avengers have now what's the word I'm looking for? Retreated to Kunlun, and they're trying to figure out what to do with Hope.
So, they should stay there.
They should just stay there. My God.
I don't want it to be bad. I was enjoying it up until the last issue.
Yep.
But it's two in a row now. It's really worrying.
You know, I was really thinking about it. And I don't even mean to now. That's what happens. I understand putting Marvel Now aside and all these sort of things. What if Phoenix came and the Phoenix Five were established and like that was just it for a year or two? You know what I mean? Like, what if this was like a slow? Why does it have to? Like, I feel like this is on fast forward. Like, why does it have
like
to?
Flashpoint.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we were like, all right, we can get with this Flashpoint, and in the end, it was just
yeah.
We'll pull. Yeah. Anyway, next.
But
Ron, please refer to them by their full name as the Phoenix Force Five.
Phoenix Force Five. Catch up.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
What, the one with all the shit in her face?
Now I keep forgetting that Watchmen was like an adult book.
Yeah.
And that these minis are also adult books, so...
So you were talking about the titties, isn't you?
No, before watching Silk Spectre number 2, which is one of the minis I'm going to continue with because it's Darwin Cook and Amanda Connor, who are two of my favorite people working in comics.
And they're kicking ass.
When they started sparking up,
crack?
Doobs?
Doobies.
That's what people call it, right?
That's the kids say, right? Grass?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, that's you don't see that very often. And then the sex happened, and then I was like, oh, that's right, it's Watchmen.
Well, and also in the cursing, I was more shocked at the cursing.
Yeah, when they said fuck, I was like, oh, right.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, hey.
By the way, this has been the oldest we've ever sounded.
You want to talk about my sciatic nerve?
What got me was the boobs. Oh, I was upset by the language.
Did you hear that language? Who talks like that?
You didn't hear anything. We were upset about it. We just said we were surprised because we forgot that this is what you're in for Watchmen.
I was really upset.
I know. I love this. This is again kind of like the first issue. Not your normal superhero story, if at all. This is a wacky '60s tale of kind of like Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah,
it was really interesting because this one actually doesn't feel like Watchmen at all, and I think that's a benefit.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like it's not trying to imitate the tone of Watchmen, and it's just sort of a wackier story. And I mean, we said it before, but Jesus, Amanda Connor,
man.
Yeah.
I mean,
all I gotta say is I live in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I have not been to any topless dance parties yet.
Well, in the 60s.
And I'm wondering if I'm not hanging out in the right places, because I'm pretty sure they still exist.
Yeah, but the people do not look like Amanda Connor drawings.
No, yeah, I know. Oh,
real, yeah, no.
And a cameo by the Beatles.
Yeah, or a pseudo, or the Watchmen Beatles.
Yeah, the Watchmen Beatles.
And also and Jim Morrison.
By the way, they weren't writing them with the right accent, but that's fine.
Yeah, and the other dude was totally the Doors, right?
Yeah, this Jim Morrison.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah,
This is great. I mean, this is really, really something special.
It's the way to do it. It's the way to not be too involved in the story of Watchmen.
Yep.
So
yeah, and you know, her past is largely undefined.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's right in that sweet spot of this is the only way that you could do this with any sort of I think safety, you know. Unlike Night Owl or some of the other books that are going directly right into the events of Watchmen, I think this is perfect.
Because this is her, like, you know, mad summer away.
Yep.
You know, what I did on my summer vacation.
No, who hasn't had one of those where we've gone to San Francisco, got involved with some sort of weird cult, and, you know, smoked a lot of grass and got one of topless dance parties?
So those jazz cigarettes.
Yeah, the jazz cigarettes.
Marijuana and he smoked it like a cigarette. I love that joke. He's gonna smoke it like a cigarette. Next up is activity number 7, and not that activity, it's a different activity. The my problem with this book all along has been
characters.
It's very good looking, it's very well plotted, it's very energetic and it has great action and great authenticity, but the character work is the weak point. I don't know who any of these people are. It's kind of too many of them. They have code names that they use sort of infrequently, so I don't know who they are. And I thought that this one made a little bit of step in that direction.
But then they put the back page with all the names and everybody. And I still don't know everybody. There's so many people.
Yeah, no, I never read that either because I know I'm not going to remember it. So. Yeah. You know, it has to be in the story. The thing has to happen to make me know them. I know that the head dude, the black guy who was the head of all of his soldiers got killed in Afghanistan, and then he got in trouble, and then they put him in charge of this. I know who he is because of that other story, which was another good sort of character bit. But this one I thought was really cool with I really liked the element of the girl who had like the life outside. Then her superior officer said, you got to break up with that guy. I can't tell you why.
Yeah.
And she just goes, okay. And then, literally in the scenes where she breaks up with him, her face was drawn to be completely blank and dead.
Yep.
And I felt that. I thought that was really nice acting, you know, on the part of Mitch's pencils. And I thought that was really well done. I would go so far as to say I think that this was my pick of the week.
Wow. I think on the character standpoint, I think that putting the cast page in the inside is probably better than at the back.
Yes,
and then
we should put it on every opposite page.
Honestly, with this kind of book, the only reason why they're giving us a large cast page is there's some bigger story. That's what I got to assume. There's some bigger story. So if that's the case, then I really don't think there's any problem with putting a caption box with who they are.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like I just did the first time you see them. Okay, good. Connected. I know who it is. Okay, good. Because I'm reading this whole series. And I don't play Modern Warfare. I don't like the guns. I'm not one of those people. I'm reading these like basically as one shots, and I'm not picking up a connective tissue.
Yeah, that's how I've been reading it too. I think.
Yeah. So.
And so if I take it on that sort of level, and I'm almost fine with that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need it to be more than that. But if there is,
yeah.
It should all. I assume it'll all come together when it needs to.
I will give them credit on one thing: is that I love this cover. I think I spent a good like a good 2 hours just looking at this. When I started the book, if something caught my eye, just the fact that it was the ship with the boat with the guys coming down on it, and then the bottom of the boat goes into the gun, the silhouette of the gun, like that. This was a good cover. So, in my opinion,
it's good issue of a pretty good series.
Yeah. So,
this is the takeaway.
Excellent. So we want to thank Seagate for sponsoring this episode, as well as sponsoring all of our San Diego Comic-Con coverage. If you've been over on iFanboy.com during San Diego, you probably read all of our great posts. And then you also, hopefully, you've been watching the video interviews that are coming out. Those have all been sponsored by Seagate. And Seagate wants to make sure you know about the Seagate GoFlex Satellite, which is the only wireless portable hard drive that streams content to your iPad and up to 8 other devices. So basically, you fill up this hard drive with all your music and movies and TV shows, throw it in your bag, turn the Wi-Fi on, and then you can stream it using their free app to your iPad or to your Android tablet or any other device that uses it. It's really easy to use. I've got one. I've used it. It's pretty awesome. And what's even better is that Seagate, we worked this deal out with Seagate for you, the listener. iFanboy listeners can get 10% off the GoFlex Satellite hard drive. You can get 500 gigabytes, Wi-Fi access, rechargeable battery, the whole shebang for 10% off. Just go to Seagate.com/iFanboy, and there you can sign up and you can purchase the GoFlex Satellite for 10% off. And it is the choice for creative professionals. Seagate, thank you very much.
I just got mine yesterday, and I downloaded the app today.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's cool.
Yeah. All right, Justice League number 11. What an issue makes. This is Jim Lee art.
Yeah, it was much better.
It was much better.
I think
it was Scott Williams and Scott Williams had assists, so it wasn't. I don't think it was because the way it was listed in the credits was Scott Williams with, not yeah. and. You know, so.
Oh, I thought you said he had assist.
Yeah. Assist. No.
So that would be a different thing.
Yeah.
It did suffer a bit from standing around talking syndrome in the Justice League part, but I thought the character stuff was really good, and I thought the ending that revealed they were too late was actually really handled really well.
Yep.
So I really quite enjoyed this issue, and the Shazam stuff was great.
And the Shazam continues to be the thing I get excited about. Yeah. The Shazam story is great. I don't know if it's Gary Frank or what, but yeah. So, Wolverine number 309. Coming out 2 weeks after 310. I don't know what you want with that.
Bi-monthly.
But in reverse, in wrong direction. Oh, 310, right. 310 came out. That was the Loeb Simone Bianchi issue. But anyway, this is just a. I don't know if this is a was an inventory story or what the deal. This some sort of filler. Ivan Brandon wrote it. That's not the story. Isn't the point? It's Raphael Albuquerque on art and Jason Latour on art. So if you like art, just pick this up and flip through the book, because between Albuquerque and Latour, these are some of the most unique, original artists around, and every page was a blast to read. So,
wow.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So it's worth checking out for the art alone. But something that's not worth checking out for the art alone was Captain Marvel number one.
Ooh.
Wow. It's almost like they don't want this book to succeed.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't know who Dexter Stoy is, and I apologize to be critical, but this was a shit show, which is tough because as far as I can tell from the story, seems interesting and it was nice, and she's got a new haircut and new costume, and you know, and Miss Marvel or Captain Marvel has a bunch of, you know, Carol Danvers has a strong following, but I do not know how you can get behind this book with art like this.
Well, on the one hand, I understand why they wouldn't, you know, pony up all their, you know, their best. You know, money for a big artist on it. I kind of get that because you're talking about a market who doesn't support female lead books all that often. But on the other hand, you're not even letting it get out of the gate.
You're right. And the thing is, keep in mind, Carol Danvers, Ms. Marvel, the last series they did with her that ran through Civil War, that ran like 60 issues.
Yeah, it ran for a while.
Yeah, so like she has a following.
I love her. She's a great character. Yeah, I didn't want to read this.
Yeah.
So
I also think it's good. The disconnect between the cover art and the interior art was so drastic, too.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you see that a lot, but I mean, this was like, it was really different style. And even if the style inside wasn't good, it's not what you're expecting when you open the book up.
Yeah, no.
They used to break in artists in series that don't exist anymore, I think.
Right.
So now, like, a new guy who comes along that maybe isn't all the way there yet, you know, they put him as the artist on a new series or something like that, and then that series doesn't go.
Yeah. I don't know whether this is a new series or an old series or an issue or fill-in or whatever. That, I mean, this art is it's offensive. It's offensive.
How so?
My visually offensive. My eyes hurt.
You just don't like the style. Or just don't like storytelling was bad.
Everything. I don't like the painted look. I thought the storytelling was it was hard to tell what was going on and where to go. It didn't have a lot going for it. So
fair enough.
Yep.
Over in BPRD land, where they can do no wrong. Long title, but BPRD Hell on Earth Devil's Engine number 3. It's this other BPRD agent is off with this girl who is sort of this group of rogue kids and she shot Abe Sapien. She was the one who did that. So he went to find out what the deal is with her, and on the way everything, all hell breaks loose, and the train they're on gets attacked. She's sort of like Layla Miller actually, by these huge, you know, giant monster bug crab things. And this is basically just one giant action scene after another, drawn really well. And that's basically all I have to say about it. And it's been like each action scene sort of eclipses the one before it. And they're tons of fun with lots of suspense and lots of big monster action. And God, it's been so good for such a long time. And it does certainly suffer from that. Nothing new to say about it, but that just how well it was done, you know, how they got into this predicament and how they got out of it, needs to be lauded a little bit. So I wanted to do that.
Is it weird that when Cliff Chang draws Wonder Woman, it's much easier to follow?
No, I don't think it's weird at all.
I think that's very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that tells you how much Cliff Chang brings to the table with a guy like Brian Azzarello, who is not always necessarily the clearest. His books don't have the clearest storytelling.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so he benefits greatly from an artist who's very good at that. And if you're talking about Cliff Chang, you're talking about a guy who's not only a really good artist and designer, but he was an editor for a while. So he's going to also usually – he's probably going to have a really good grasp of storytelling even beyond to a certain extent. Yeah. I just – the difference between this issue and the last issue was night and day.
Yeah.
Last issue, I was like, I don't know what's going on. I'm not really all that interested in this. And this one, we were right back to. I feel like it feels like Action Comics when it went away for a while and then it got back to what it was actually doing in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was like, this is what I want. I'm totally down with this. I'm really enjoying this Greek gods thing. So that it was very good. I was very happy to see that it sort of righted itself.
Nice rebound.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
So those are the books that we enjoyed or didn't enjoy that we just felt were deemed worth talking about this week. Go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can see all the books that came out this week, and you can do your pull list and you can rate and review your books and you can make your pick of the week. And we're going to highlight the top 5 picks of the week from the iFanboy community. And coming at number 5 was the aforementioned Wonder Woman number 11 with 4.5% of the pick of the week, folks. Number 4 was Justice League number 11. With 5.7% of the pick of the week, so Jim Lee kind of rebounds there, gets some people liking what he's doing.
It looked good.
Number 3, a book we didn't talk about, but was creepy. Daredevil number 15, Mark Waid and Chris Omni come in at 9.6% of the picks of the week, and another solid showing by them.
Another good rebound there.
Yeah. Although it's still dark. I don't know. Anyway, number 2 is The Activity, number 7, with 12% of the picks of the week. Yeah.
That's impressive.
That's very impressive. And coming in number 1, Saga, number 5, The Juggernaut Continues, although not as strong as previous weeks, with 44.6% of the picks of the week.
Only a plurality, not a majority.
Yeah, there you go.
Two Image books on the top of the list.
Yeah, look at that.
There you go. And then we're going to go on to some user reviews. First one up is David Clark with Exo Manowar number 3. Give the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage is 0.4%. And he says, this keeps getting better. The pace is breakneck without feeling rushed. This is a great book. The Nord pencils and Gaudiano's inks are fire on all 12 cylinders. Seriously, you should be reading Exo Manowar. Spoiler. In this issue alone, we see he's bullet pointed these. Eric lay waste to a ton of Vine lackeys, drop a bomb out of his good hand, grow a new left hand to replace the one hacked off in issue 1, was it? Get blasted into space by the bot that captured him years ago after he smashes the crap out of it, armor to armor. Unlock the teleporting power of the armor by uttering Rome after dreaming of his wife. You get the idea, I hope.
I don't.
An exciting book. One of the few that keeps me wanting more. Ron, what does any of that mean?
Honestly, I didn't read it. I've fallen behind on this, but I'm planning on it because a couple of friends of mine who were reading this were raving about this issue and said that, you know, like I read the first issue and I kind of slowed up on it because I thought they were doing the slow burn thing, but they said it all paid off in this issue and that apparently that now the momentum is really building on X-Men War, so I'm going to catch up on it. But this wasn't the only person I heard raving about this issue. So.
Did you guys read this stuff? Because I wasn't around when this was coming out.
I did hear the
first time.
I was on the periphery only purely from the Image crossover. Like once Image crossed over with them, then I started getting into it, and then that was right when it imploded. So, but I have a basic knowledge of all the characters. I am reading Harbinger, which I'm enjoying, which I'll talk about in the next issue that's coming out.
It's interesting because I read one of them. I don't even remember which one. But because they're rehashes of these old things, like I just can't drum up interest for it.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that they're just taking the concept, they're just doing it.
I get that. And I know that it's a new thing for new people, but like because it just doesn't interest me.
Right.
Like I don't know what it is. I don't look at the title. I don't look at the outside of it and think, oh, this is a thing I want to check out.
Yeah.
You know, the creative teams are fine. You know, but they're not blowing me away with it. So. You know, there was nothing to sort of pull me in. People keep asking on iFanboy, why are you guys talking about this? Yeah. And I don't care.
Yeah, well, yeah. And unfortunately, I think that when the last Harbinger issue came out, I wasn't on the show or whatever. It's just been scheduling-wise, but I am reading them. I'm actually really excited for Fred Van Lente and Archer and Armstrong. I think that one's going to be a lot of fun.
That's the only one that I was kind of like, yeah. I'm curious what that is. I read...
You like Archers.
Any character that's an Archer, I'm fine with.
That's your thing.
I'm getting a Brave tattoo on my chest. No. What's the book that Josh Dysart's doing?
Oh, that's Harbinger, I think, right?
Yeah, I read that first one.
Yeah.
It was all right.
Yeah, I like that one.
There you go.
Yeah, fair enough. Ninja Wizard 23 reviewed Star Trek, The Next Generation, Doctor Who, Assimilation 2,
Assimilation.
Number 3.
Jeez.
Give a story 4 out of 5 and the art of 4 out of 5 and 0.9% of You Made Your Pick of the Week. And Ninja Wizard 23 says, with the first two issues of this crossover serving mostly as exposition, issue 3 promised to dive headfirst into the epic teaming up of the 11th Doctor with the crew of the Enterprise-D. And that sort of happened. The issue picks up right where it left off, with the Doctor, Picard, and the rest of the gang smack dab in the middle of a Borg Cyberman fleet. Following a brief resistance's futile-esque greeting from a Borgman, the Enterprise heads into a handy nebula to regroup and figure things out. But instead of focusing on the Next Generation crew's collaboration with the Doctor and his companions, we instead flash back about 100 years. While it could be mildly annoying that the first three issues haven't featured much of the actual selling point of this comic, Picard, the Doctor, Date.
Data.
I assume that means Data. Amy Pond.
It's not me this week. and my user review was difficult.
The writers give us a pretty acceptable substitute. Captain Kirk meets Tom Baker. Tom Baker offers Spock jelly babies. It's all pretty cool. I don't know what any of that means either.
Yeah, I was going to say we're in a point where I understand half of it and you understand half of it.
Well, you know who fucking Kirk and Spock are.
They're the ones. Yeah, I know. It's two things that come out of this. One, IDW has a titling problem.
Yes.
With their G.I. Joe Cobra 2, Volume 1, Number 3. And then whatever this thing was that he couldn't even read.
I read one word wrong. The other one was spelled wrong.
No. Just I'm just saying. It's like a long, stupid title.
Assimilation. No space in the middle.
And three, they have a lot of promises of crossovers that don't ever fucking happen.
Well, it sounds like they're actually in the story together. They just don't interact much.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Infestation, which promised the greatest story of all time. And never even came close to delivering.
Well, this is what happens with these licensed properties is that they can only do they've got to get approval and they can only do you can't have as much interaction as you would hope.
They must touch.
Yeah.
Don't let them. But no, when you say Doctor Who and Star Trek, I want to see the Doctor on the fucking bridge.
Yep.
Working with that, and that should have happened.
Wait, do you mean McCoy or Crusher?
Yeah.
No. not at all.
Who was the other weird Doctor of Next Generation that was there for one season?
Pulaski.
Pulaski.
Yep.
Like the Skyway.
Yep.
Yeah. Now you're talking about.
She was kind. She was slightly mannish.
She was there because Crusher dropped out for one season and then she came back.
Yep.
Yeah. Gates McFadden.
Beverly Crusher.
We're gonna name her Gates. All right.
Well, what are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
So those are the user reviews. If you want to go to fanboy.com/comics, you can make your pull list. You can rate and review your books. And if you write a good review, you read it on the show. Make sure you do it by Thursday, because when you people write reviews on Saturday, Sunday, you're out of luck. Sorry.
It's just the way it is.
It's life. So, but if you're not reviewing a book and you're a creator or publisher and you're looking for a way to get your book in front of as many people as possible, as easily as possible, Graphically is the best solution to do that. You can upload your book, your comic, your children's book, your sketchbook, your photography book, just about anything that's got graphics in it. In just a few simple steps, you're on your way to getting into Amazon's Kindle store, Barnes & Noble's Nook store, Kobo, and, of course, the Apple iBook store. There's no need to have readers find a specific app just made for reading comics. Send your book to where the readers are in the digital bookstores. That's where people are looking for books. And with 29% of all adults have tablets, they have e-reader devices, and sales are up 300% from last year. It's a lot of potential customers. You can find all of our pricing and services at our website. Head over to graphically.com for more details. Excellent. Book of the month time.
Book of the month. So, book of the month. I had a bunch of different options of books I was kind of weighing and considering for the July book of the month. But once I finished Get Jiro by Anthony Bourdain and Joel Rose with art by Langdon Foss, it was kind of it was a done deal.
Can I interject before you get into your thing? I want to say this real quick. I have heard from some people that there was rumblings out there that you picked a book that was not by a real comics person, and that it was just
the standard ooh, celebrities coming into comics.
This is not one of those people, because I just want people to know that I heard that there was a comic book about cooking written by Anthony Bourdain, who is a real writer in his own right, not just
Absolutely.
A guy. Yep. Writes for Treme, writes books, writes fiction, writes nonfiction.
He writes his TV show. He writes his nonfiction TV show. He writes all the voiceovers.
And this is directly up Ron's alley. So everything that he says from here on is utterly sincere, but maybe specific to this one man.
Yep. But
not before that. Before that, everything was insincere.
Yep.
Sincere starts now.
I'm backing up my bro.
Well, what's funny also, the thing is, you don't want this kind of conversation to take away from the work. And I tried to reflect that in my written review over at iFanboy.com, because Anthony Bourdain is, you know, kind of a big deal in the world of food now. You know, these past 10 years, he kind of shocked the world with his book Kitchen Confidential, which kind of he was the one that taught you never to order fish in New York City on a Monday. Because it was not fresh at all, and other kind of things like that. And then through his TV show on No Reservations, he's become a very notable kind of personality, television personality. And so, you know, a lot of people, when this got announced, and this got announced, what, like 2 years ago, a year?
Yeah,
2 years ago. Least, yeah. And everyone's like, oh, another, you know, everyone's going to comics and doing, you know, trying to make money in comics. Now, I knew this for a fact because I watched No Reservations and I saw the episode where he went to Cleveland and hung out with Harvey Pekar. Like, I knew that Anthony Bourdain had good taste. But you guys were in the room with me when we interviewed Anthony Bourdain and Joel Ross at San Diego. I didn't even start asking questions about comics, and Bourdain starts dropping Eisner, Kurtzman, Davis, you know, like Kirby, like, and the same reverence that we speak in of it. You know, and if you listen to the Don't Miss podcast that I did with the co-writer Joel Rose, he tells a story that 20 years ago, Anthony Bourdain submitted a written and drawn comic that he did himself to Joel Rose for an anthology.
Yeah.
Like, dude likes comics. There's no question of legitimacy as far as I'm concerned for Bourdain. And honestly, in reading Get Jiro, it shows. Both him and Joel Rose is an established editor and writer in his own right. He worked at DC for years. They get how to tell a story. And it's apparent in this. And then when they brought their story idea to Vertigo, they teamed them up with Langdon Foss, who is very, very good in that Seth Fisher kind of style. And I imagine if Seth Fisher hadn't passed away, or if this was 10 years ago, Seth Fisher could have easily drawn this book.
He would have been good for it because he lived in Japan.
Right, exactly.
What's the story?
So the story is it's a near future story. So it's takes place not in our time, but in a time where, you know, there's still cars look the same way. Like, there's not, you know, they're still Bluetooth headsets, things like
they're
that.
Not flying cars.
Yeah, so. No flying cars. Yeah, it's still north.
Fuck, when is that going to happen?
But it's a world.
Yeah, bad news.
It's a world that takes place in the story takes place in Los Angeles, and basically all of the power structures that we're comfortable, that we're aware of in our society now have fallen down, have fallen apart. So celebrity is gone, sports is gone, whatever. Really the only power or celebrity is around food. And that's the environment that we live in. And there are kind of two kind of warring factions, two kind of sides. There's the Wolfgang Puck corporate, including meat in their dishes-esque chef and corporation that have big restaurants and everyone knows about them. And then there's the sustainability, go vegan, hippies side. All right, so those are the two kind of sides that are always at odds, and you get the sense that there's a strong power struggle for all the, you know, the food resources, you know, whether it's fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, fresh meat, or you know, or whatnot, as well as talent, you know, in terms of having basically these groups of chefs are also gangs, which is kind of funny and too. And caught in the middle of this is a sushi chef named Jiro, who is on the outskirts of Los Angeles, just very quietly making sushi in his own little spot, and the kind of, you know, the quiet guy who's focused on, he just does one thing and does it well, that sort of thing. And both warring factions catch wind of Jiro, and they both want him on their side. And what happens is that this whole book basically tells the story of how they're both kind of after Jiro, and how he, you know, weighs each side and plays them both from the middle, and then ultimately has his beats them both. And you know, you take it with a grain of salt. There's a lot of Bourdain in it. Bourdainism. You know, the opening scene alone, we get introduced to Jiro when a bunch of bros come in to get sushi, and they're, you know, they've got soul patches and Bluetooth headsets, and they're raving about the California roll. And then they grab the sushi, they grab a salmon roll, and they dip it in a wasabi laden soy sauce bath, and then eat it. And then finally Jiro just has too much and chops one of his heads off and yells, "No California roll." So, you know, and if you know, Bourdain doesn't really think very highly of the vegan vegetarian side of things. So
he hates
of,
them.
Yeah, he does.
Yes, he does.
He does. I saw him speak back in October in Oakland, and he said, he's like, "No, I respect them. I respect their wishes. It's just, I, you know, they're wrong."
I think he's like the ruin of all cuisine.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and so, you know, it's clever, it's funny at times, violent at times, and I mean, it basically it's like 160 pages, whatever, and it passed my one sitting test, you know, which is that, you right. know, like I never got bored of it, and then next thing I know, it was over. And I would love to see more stories from this world, you know, like this idea, you know, like what's going on in New York. Like, it was that kind of like, kind of had the same feeling after I read Ender's Game, where I'm like, oh, this is a whole world that I just want to get absorbed in. So really good. Solid graphic novel, great product. And they pulled it off. They did it. There's no pretense to it. There's no they didn't cut corners. There's no storytelling problems. Like, everything, it was as solid as any graphic novel I've read, and good at that. So
did it make you hungry?
Oddly not, no.
Really? Not really a sushi guy.
No, yeah, no, I'm not. Although I've sampled a little, but it's not. But there's a lot of food. There's more violence.
You had a California roll. Yeah.
No, I actually never had a California roll. I don't like avocado.
What?
How do you live in California if you don't
I
like
know,
avocado?
I can't get a fucking BLT
that's,
for the life
that's
of me.
That's why I had to move. Yeah. I didn't really like avocado, and I was like, I can't get anything.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Anyway,
it's
no,
very
it's
good
just
for
mush.
You also,
it's just mush.
But yes. It's mushy.
Anyway, but so get Jiro from Vertigo. It is $24.99, the hardcover edition of it. Beautiful, 160 pages. Go to ifanboy.com, read my review there. And yeah, it's good. I'm going to get Japanese for dinner tonight. No, actually, I'm going to get tacos. So.
That's a better move.
Yeah.
Tacos are delicious.
All right, let's do a couple of emails. First email's from Eric from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. He's probably very sexy.
I imagine. Has to be.
Eric says, recently I lost my mind and decided to go to MorrisonCon.
Thank you, Eric. Awesome.
Even though I live in Brazil and have no money and shouldn't be doing this kind of eccentricity. Before the con, I'll also spend a week in New York and San Francisco each, and I'm writing to ask for suggestion of what to do, see while there, especially reading regarding clubs, bars, local bands, things like that, especially since I've really come to respect you guys' taste for music, especially Ron's. Please take into account that cheap equals good and expensive equals bad. Also, what comic store should I visit? Thank you for suggestion.
Well,
now, I the number one, I thought, interesting enough, we get a lot of travel.
We really do.
Emails where people ask us what to do on vacations. Number two, I thought since Ron, if this guy's coming to Ron's show, Ron could then take the time to give him some.
He owes
some
him.
Yes.
Yeah, I did. Well, thank you, Eric.
He's going to talk to you sexy. You should have read that in an accent.
I'm sorry. My voice hurts.
I don't know. Yeah.
thank you, Eric, for coming to Morrison Connor. For those who don't know, me and James Simon, Kirsten Baldock from Isotope are working with Grant Morrison to throw a small, intimate convention. You can go to MorrisonCon.com for information. It's at the end of September in Vegas. It's going to be a blast. And actually, if you're thinking of going, get tickets now because prices are going up soon. So go to MorrisonCon.com to get all the info. And so thank you for coming. And so, yes, I would gladly give you, and you guys can chime in on the New York side of things when I get there. But if you're coming to San Francisco, absolutely go to Isotope. Go to Isotope Comics and tell James that you're going to Morrison Con and he'll treat you well. That's really the only comics destination you need to go to in the San Francisco Bay Area. As far as clubs, bars, and local bands, I don't know much about local bands, but as far as clubs go, The Independent is one of my favorite venues to see live music at. It's cheap, it's good, it's a small venue, it's really good. Also, you might want to check out the Parkside, which is fun. It's a little more on the punkier kind of dive side of things.
Are you talking about San Francisco now?
San Francisco, yeah.
Okay.
And then
where are the topless dance parties?
They're there.
Yeah, geez. But San fucking Francisco or whatever the guy said. So that's San Francisco. Bars, I go for the dive bar type, so Lucky 13 or Molotov's one of my favorite ones. And yeah, there's tons of great places to go to in San Francisco. You want to check out the Mission. That's probably the most happening kind of great. There's a great bar called Casanova that was just there the other night. That was a lot of fun. So now, as far as New York goes, comic stores. I mean, our standard is kind of Midtown Comics, Jim Hanley's Universe, Bergen Street Comics in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Forbidden Planet down in Union Square. That's a great shop. They're moving to a bigger space now.
Yeah, down the block.
Yeah. So great comic stores in New York. Venue, music-wise, it's a little tougher than San Francisco because things tend to sell out a bit more and more in advance, so they tend to be more expensive. But Irving Plaza is a good venue. Terminal 5 is a good venue. Trying to think where else music is going on. I'm kind of tragically getting out of touch with New York as far as the scene. But
it also depends who's playing, though, right?
Yeah, true. It depends on who you want. Yeah, exactly. If you're in New York, go to the Village. There's the Mercury Cafe has good bands playing there, and that's right on Houston, right at the bottom of the Greenwich Village. And there's a ton of bars and restaurants all around there. So
we're alienating our user base.
If you're in San Diego and you go to Hennessy's, a band will just keep coming for 2 hours.
With
and they'll never actually set it up or play. They'll just keep bringing it in,
which is better.
So anyway, Eric, if you need any more information, just email me and I'll be happy to give you direct directions and direct locations and things like that. Okay, sorry. Went on for too long.
Josh.
Yeah. Alex, a.k.a. Max Power, that's what his parents call him, is from Woodland, California, and says, every time I crack open my Amazing Spider-Man Omnibus or a Superman DC Archives book, I feel like a bad comic book fan. I know these are fantastic stories right in front of me, and yet sometimes the pinnacles of superhero storytelling can be a slog to get through all that exposition in every panel. Often I find it easiest to just ignore the caption boxes and just read the dialogue bubbles. I can appreciate that the audience for most classic comics was certainly much younger and of a different time, but that doesn't necessarily make it less work to get through. Am I just a spoiled product of modern comics world, or is it okay to feel this way? How do you guys read classic stories without feeling like it takes an hour per issue? I expect nothing less than 2 sleepless nights of thinking about this. We've thought. Thanks.
Josh agrees with you for sure.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. I mean, we're gonna say 3 to 4 issues into my Amazing Spider-Man Omnibus that I've had for 4 to 5 years, and I think that I need to do exactly what you're talking about, is just concentrate on that Steve Ditko storytelling, and just appreciate it on that level to a certain extent, because many of the words, while fun, are a bit superfluous.
Ron, wasn't there a time a few years ago when Josh said he wouldn't read any comic or watch any movie older than like 10 years?
Yes, he did. That is accurate.
I never said that.
Yes, you did. You totally did, because we jumped all over you.
That's fine. You find that for me.
It was a conversation. It wasn't like it was an email.
Yeah.
I'm sure I may have expressed a preference, but I'm sure that it wasn't a line in the sand.
It was.
I won't do it.
It was. Ron, it was.
It was.
Talk about slog. I'm reading, I'm almost done. I started right when I moved, but reading the Captain Britain Omnibus, Alan Moore, Alan Davis one. That's a slog to get through, man. Talk about.
And that's
borders.
Alan Moore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's not even so long ago. That was late 70s, early 80s, and that was still a little rough. I mean, the thing is, you got to put what I do is I put my mindset into the head of the year that it was. I try to understand, okay, this is how comic storytelling was at that time. And
he gets concerned about gas shortages.
I do. Yeah,
it's true. I do that with movies too. I mean, you watch an old movie.
The price of cocaine.
Yeah. You watch an old movie, completely different in the way they're shot, the way that they talk, and just you have to sort of appreciate for that time period. If you can't do that, then you shouldn't read old stories or watch old movies.
I think that one of the keys to me, because you know I've evolved and changed over this, and I really do appreciate the history of stuff, is to really look and see what there's a reason that a lot of this stuff is revered. You know, there's a reason that you know people talk about Steve Ditko the way they do, and to try to see that and try to see sort of the roots of what people consider the standard now. And if you can find that stuff, then you'll find a way to appreciate it.
The economy of storytelling, the imagination,
yeah.
The characters. I mean,
the imagination is huge because if you think about it now, the industry is largely living off of those ideas. Yeah. And this is where those ideas were born, and that's pretty amazing when you look at the stuff and you'll think, God, none of this existed before that. Yeah. I'm flipping through my Jack Kirby Captain America omnibus right now, and I haven't read it all the way through, but I flip through it and look at it constantly.
Yeah.
The thing is, and he's right, Alex, in that they were written for children in the 40s or 50s or whatever era you're reading, so they're going to be written differently. And I love that stuff. I was looking through my old Batman Chronicles from the 40s the other day, and you know, every other issue ends with Batman lecturing the audience about not being a criminal, and I think it's great.
You will not have more fun than reading the Stan and Jack Fantastic Four run, when there's like intense superhero action and then just batshit crazy stuff happening, like Reed Richards shaving in the middle of the Galactus saga, or Namor as a movie producer. It was just like what?
You know, what's really interesting about a lot of that stuff too is just to see what was accepted and what was normal then, as a sort of time capsule in history.
Yep.
There's also something really fascinating about
a lot
of that stuff.
The inherent racism.
like really, really being verbally abusive towards your wife.
Anyway, so good question though, but yeah, you just gotta take some patience with it and don't rush through. Just enjoy, soak it in.
Or if you don't like it, then just read it.
Not everything's for everybody. Yeah. These Kirby pages are gorgeous.
They are.
Yeah. So. Those are
everybody is very dramatic with their reaction looks.
Yeah. Dynamism.
So
everything was very, very exciting.
If you've got any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We're going to skip the voicemails this week because we talked about the book of the month, but call in at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
Don't Miss Podcast is usually on Mondays. We're still behind on that. We're not going to lie to you. I'm not going to bullshit you.
Yeah,
it'll be back next week.
So.
And then there's the Make Comics Podcast. Same deal. Deal with it.
What we're not behind on is the three of us got together. The reason why we're so punchy is because we all went to the midnight showing of The Dark Knight Rises last night. We're operating on, I'm 3 or 4 hours of sleep. So we got together to talk about it. So if you saw The Dark Knight Rises or just want to hear us talk about it, there's a lot to talk about. Then go to the feed you're listening to now. Check the show behind this one or go to ifanboy.com or go wherever you get a podcast. And it will be there magically.
Magically.
Delicious.
Yeah. And meanwhile, go to ifanboy.com. You can read my Pick of the Week review. You can read Ron's Book of the Month review. You can go and see the return of the video show. While we were at ifanboy, we shot lots of videos. We're putting an interview out a day. Instead of doing big compilation shows, we're putting separate interviews out, or sometimes one or two, depending on how long they were. We try to do longer, more in-depth interviews this year. So we did them all separate. We're putting new ones out every day. So check the video feed. Go to ifanboy.com. You can stream them. They're on youtube.com/ifanboy. All those places you can go to find the San Diego videos. We've put out a couple. Anthony Bourdain, Ron talked to. We talked to who did we put out already?
We did our first talk with Robert Kirkman, a short one. That was a lot of fun. We're going to have a longer one coming out soon, so stay tuned for that. Anthony Bourdain and Joel Rose and Sam Humphrey so far. Yeah, right. And then
Sam, if you want to break into writing comics, you need to listen to that.
Yep, absolutely.
Or watch it.
I'm really excited to watch because I wasn't there for the interview. On Monday, you'll get a super long chat with Greg Rucka.
Yeah.
So we're trying to do more in-depth and more often for Comic-Con this year.
In
so
this case, you are viewers.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, or your discussion topics, hotel advice, TV VCR repair, veterinary practice. Nope, those are schools. I'm sorry.
Wait, don't travel agents get a fee?
Yeah,
there are no longer
15 years ago.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Anyway,
if somebody says to you, "I am a travel agent," they sell drugs.
If you like what you're listening to, go to iTunes and write a review of this podcast, as well as the Don't Miss podcast, the Make Comics podcast, and the video podcast. Now that it's back, go in and write reviews or leave a comment on YouTube for the videos. Help spread the word. Tweet out about the videos you like. Let people know. Send out the links.
Share that stuff.
Post them on Facebook. You guys help us spread the word, and we really appreciate it. And thank you all. We survived San Diego for you. We're going to bring you more fruits of our labor in San Diego, and we hope you enjoy it. And it's just good to be home.
You just make us sound like such martyrs.
I know, isn't it? So, all right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I am Josh. Thank you very much.